there, and welcome to another episode of the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and in each episode of this podcast, I get to talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest today is Linda Jamson, an American expat living in Helsinki. Linda is a pianist and singer who spent most of her career as a fundraiser before leaving it all behind after a psychic convinced her to move to Europe to find love. This extraordinary story is the subject of Linda's first book, Odyssey of Love, a Memoir of Seeking and Finding, which came out in June 2021. Enjoy the show. Linda, it's really lovely to meet you today.
And hello, Alison. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome. So tell me about your book.
Well, I wrote a book. The name is Odyssey of Love, a Memoir of Seeking and Finding. And it's about the events leading up to and after my 41st birthday, when I suddenly found myself at a crossroads. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I had long been expecting my boyfriend of 7 years, his name was Hank, to propose marriage. And when he didn't, the whole situation really backfired. And I had a big decision to make. Do I stay? Do I leave? Mm-hmm. And I met with my best friend, Jenny, who actually suggested I see her psychic.
Okay.
So she sent me to her psychic and I was initially quite reluctant. But I was really hoping the psychic, her name was Angelica. I was hoping Angelica would tell me that Hank would come around, you know, that just be patient, hang in there, you know, it will take time, but he will come around and you'll marry him. That's what I was hoping to hear. But what I heard instead was like totally opposite. She told me almost right away, like the person you're with is not the one, he's holding you back, which was actually really true. But there are certain things you don't want to hear, as you know. So she envisioned this whole other life for me, which involved moving overseas to Europe and quitting my job. I was at that time a professional fundraiser. And she said that my future husband was a tall man with glasses. That's how she described him, a tall man with glasses who would come into my life, not immediately, but eventually overseas, and that a Russian icon would bring us together.
Ooh, intriguing.
So I was really intrigued. So I'm actually part Russian on my grandmother's side. And she was Russian Orthodox. So the icon, I felt like connected somehow with her. Anyway, I had always been intrigued with Russian because of her at that point, and wanted to travel there. And actually I wanted to explore other routes in Eastern Europe. But the person I was with, Hank, he didn't like to travel. So I wasn't doing what I wanted to do anyway. And he was holding me back. That was true. So what happened was, at first I thought this sounds really like a lot of hocus pocus. And how could I ever afford it? What would I do in Europe? You know, I couldn't just go there and fundraise. So it turned out that what she said next really piqued my interest. She said that she saw me immersed in music again. And I'm a pianist and a singer, and I had gotten away from it. You know, I had been so focused on my career, my relationship, and my, actually I had gone back to graduate school. And so I was getting away from playing, you know, my piano was getting dusty in the corner. And so when I heard that, I thought, yes, music. So where to begin? I am a big fan of Hungarian composer pianist Franz Liszt, who wrote Liebestraum and a lot of other beautiful music that I love. And I had grown up hearing my mother play his music. I also played his music. And I thought, okay, I'm going to begin in Hungary, in Budapest, where he was from. And actually the title of my book, Odyssey of Love, comes from a Liszt quote. He said, my life has been nothing but an odyssey of love. I was fitted only for loving. So I thought that was the perfect odyssey of love, was perfect quote from, you know, perfect title for my book.
What a beautiful quote. I do like that.
And he was a very passionate person and very inspirational. So I thought, okay. And so she saw like musical instruments around me. She saw me teaching students, which really, like, at that time I was really afraid of public speaking. So there was, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag, but ultimately I thought, okay, I talked to Jenny again, my friend, about it. And it seemed like, okay, how can I try to make this work? And I won't get into the details. I write all about it, but I did go there. I volunteered for the List Academy of Music as a fundraiser. I sang there. I wound up singing there in a chorus. And I did teach English. I was horrified at first, but I wound up loving it and got over my fears. So that was great. And as for this tall man with glasses, I was just, you know, traveling around, keeping my eyes wide open.
One with glasses. Is it you?
Yeah. And there were quite a few men who were very attractive and appealing who met that description, but they were ultimately imposters. So I kept looking. And I won't give away the ending, but let's just say it's a happy ending.
That's really good. So what inspired you to write about your story?
Well, the inspiration came actually from a sad event. After I met my future husband, and just before, actually literally a month before we got married, my father died unexpectedly. And it had a really dramatic impact on me in many ways. And I initially canceled the wedding.
He was back in America then, and you were living in Europe.
And I was actually, I was visiting at that time. And I had been, I had gone to New York for a wedding. He was in the Amherst, Massachusetts area. And I had just seen him the day before. So it was all like, it was really hard for me to like wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
Poor mother, he was 73, which now seems very young, you know? So what happened was I had was having a very difficult time, and someone suggested to me that I start writing about my dad, like write letters to my dad, write about your dad. And so I did, and it was very cathartic. And then I started writing about my mother and other people in situations. And then I thought, okay, now I'm going to start to write about more uplifting, fun things. And that's when stories came to me from this experience I'd had, this odyssey that I'd been on, this adventure leading up to meeting my husband. So I started writing about some of the guys I'd met and the cultural clashes that I'd experienced, and the beautiful places I'd visited, like the spas in Hungary and or like the opera house in Vienna, whatever. And so I wrote like stories, and then I realized, okay, chapters are coming, they're forming. And then I thought, okay, that could be a whole section of Europe. This could be a whole Hungarian section. So I saw those coming. And then I saw the big story arc, you know, from Boston to Finland. And then I thought, okay, this is a book here.
So you never started out with the intention of it being a book. It was more therapy.
It was therapy.
To get you through your father's death, and the book came out of it.
And I have to say, because these were such glorious, fun years in my life, that going back and writing about people I'd met, who I'm still friends with now, actually, but writing about these fun times and singing, and we actually went to Israel and sang, and I mean, just really fantastic experiences. So it was really, really a positive thing to think about when I was going through this, such a sorrowful time.
Kind of reset the balance of on the one hand, you'd lost your father and there was all the grief.
So I felt that.
But also to reflect on how good life has been as well.
So I felt like that was somehow a gift he gave me, because actually just before he died, about 2 weeks before, he finished his own autobiography that he had written in a class, like adult ed class. And so I actually have that here in my office. So he was writing, and so I thought, okay, it's a gift he gave to me, because I probably would never have written anything had he not. So it's bittersweet, really.
But it sounds like a really wonderful, I want to go and read the book now. It sounds like a really wonderful, wonderful book. I shall go and look it up. So how did you go about getting the book published?
Well, that was another process. When I finally saw these chapters emerging and the story, I thought, okay, you know, maybe other people would want to read this. And my friends were entertained by the story because I would tell it verbally and they knew how I met my husband and the adventures I had. And so, but I, because it was my first big project writing, I thought, okay, I need to go to some writer conferences. So I went to two in New York City when I was visiting there and I got really good feedback. And then I went to one in actually York, England.
Okay.
And another one to Stockholm. And the kind of feedback I got there, it was, at the time, it kind of annoyed me because they said to me, I met with a few agents and they said, okay, we really like your story. There's potential, but as fiction, you should rewrite it as fiction.
Really?
Oh. And I thought, oh, well, then how does that work? Because like everyone knows this is my story and the people who know me and my husband and this person. And how could I just say like that I made it up? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I kept hearing that. And I knew that, you know, it would be maybe more marketable. It's easier to for them to sell fiction.
Right.
Especially with a first time author. So it took a while, but at the last festival, which was in Stockholm 3 years ago, because then the pandemic came.
Right.
I decided after that, okay, after I heard that one more time, you know, I thought, now I'm going to self-publish. I'm going to do it myself. And because I didn't know really where to begin, I had taken some webinars and things. I enlisted the help of an organization, a company in America to help.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was in their marketing class for a month. It was wonderful. And they ultimately helped me with the self-publishing and the marketing. So that was very, that was, and then the, this all happened, that part happened during the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, good timing.
Yeah, I thought, okay, now I'm home. And I had other focuses, like I was singing a lot in different choruses here. And I was supposed to travel again. And I thought, okay, now I'm just home. Now I have to really get serious and do, because it was edited and everything, time to publish it. And I also thought it was a good time with the pandemic that people wanted to hear about a happy ending or happy story. So it also seemed the timing was right. So even though it took years, you know, the process took many years, I think it was, the timing was right ultimately.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, I don't know about you, but I read a lot during those first lockdowns. I read escapism. I read happy things.
Yeah,
I couldn't cope with anything demanding, anything sad. It was, I wanted happy stories.
I read a lot of Jenny Colgan.
lots of those books called the Little Bookshop by the Sea and the Little Cafe on the Corner and all those.
Yeah, me too. I was reading those or the Cupcake Cafe or something, you know, like
exactly.
reading this light stuff.
Just those kind of feel-good, fluffy stories that would take me away from the realities of what was going on. And it sounds like, although yours is obviously a true story and a memoir and not fiction, it sounds like with the happy ending and all the exciting things that it sounds like you got up to, it is that kind of feel-good book.
Yeah, that's the feedback I've gotten. Actually, someone reviewed it recently, another memoir writer, and she said it's better than fiction because it's real, because it's true. And I thought, wow, that's a good point, actually, because if you read a story like and it's not true, you know, someone made it up, you think, oh, but if it really is true, then you think, wow, someone really had that experience.
Yeah.
And then you think maybe I could, too, you know.
There's hope for me. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think I need to hook up with your friends, your friend's psychic, actually. I think that's what I need. So so how has the book done? How have you gone about marketing it? Because, I mean, marketing books is really difficult, isn't it?
So what happened was I had signed up with this company. It was back actually in November and my book came out last June. So that's about 5 months or whatever.
Yeah.
Or six, or more than that, actually, 7 months. The book was supposed to be released in April, but it kept getting pushed back. And then it was actually released on my birthday, June 1st.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So from November to like January, we worked on the book cover and the design, the interior design. And meanwhile, I was editing, and they had their own editor helping me too. But one thing that was really interesting, but I was hesitant about, was, you know, they wanted me to set up an author account with Instagram, set up an author page on Facebook, do this, do that. And it seemed really like too soon. You know, I felt a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That way too. But, you know, you have to start marketing before the book's even out.
You do. Yeah. You need to have people ready to buy it when it comes out, don't you, to make an impact. Yeah.
So they had this really good suggestion to have a launch team. And I had about 100 people on my launch team.
Yeah.
And I planned a launch event, which was incredible. It was on Zoom. People from around the world, a lot of musicians had sent videos of their performances. I read from my book. It was about an hour.
Yeah.
And but leading up to that, what happened was the people on the launch team, many of them had read the arc of the book and they left reviews on Goodreads.
Okay. So you'd already got word out.
So I had the Goodreads, maybe 10 or 20 already there, which was a start because, you know, you can't leave them on Amazon till launch day.
Yeah.
So, and then those people got a reminder, you know, on June 1st, please now go to Amazon, leave your review. So some of my friends, they were like really ready. It was really sweet. Like midnight in the States, they were like really ready to post. And then it was just, you know, word of mouth. And then also Instagram was an incredible resource. I don't know if you're on there or if you use it, but
kind of, yeah.
Use Twitter. I know a lot of people go to, so it depends. For me, I've had, I think I feel more comfortable with Facebook because I've been on it for so many years. And Instagram. And there's the huge community of really supportive independent authors there or aspiring writers. And people were reviewing my book, people I didn't even know. And actually just the other day, I came back from vacation and I Googled myself because I try not to very often, but I thought, okay, I've been away about 2 weeks, better look. And this young woman who is not even really in my target audience, she looked like she was 25 maybe, she had my book there and she was just giving a review and she was so, you know, happy and excited and everything. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I reached out to her and she said she knew about me through Instagram.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it does
work
then.
Yeah. I've got a lot of reviewers through Instagram and I've met a lot of, you know, friends virtually.
Yeah.
So that's been really wonderful. So these are the kinds of things I never would have done without this company behind
me. Right. Yeah.
Helping out, guiding me, you know. So that was a really great resource. And so I feel really lucky I was able to do that.
Yeah, it's really exciting when it breaks outside your circle, isn't it? Because it's one thing your friends write it. Yeah, my mom always puts a review on about my books, which is lovely. And you know, and sort of close friends. But once you get a review from someone, you think, I have no idea who you are, how you found my book, and you're saying nice things about it. That's always quite special.
And I've even gotten some selfies from 80-year-old women.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, like, I'm so-and-so's daughter, and I just read your book, and she gave me the book at Christmas time to read, and they go on and on, and, like, I posted some of them on my author page, you know.
Yeah.
For actually, when I had this launch team, and it was very active, like, about a year ago, people were sending selfies all the time. You know, here I am in Lapland, and I'm in Greece, and the book's everywhere. It was flying everywhere, Scotland in front of some castle, you know. And I thought, oh, my God, the book's like, you know, getting all this mileage much more than I am. So that was really fun to do that.
Yeah. It sounds like it has really wide appeal then, whereas you thought maybe it was going to be kind of much broader appeal.
Yeah, I mean, you always think about your target audience, and I was thinking more about women around maybe, you know, 10 years before and after the age of 41, which was the age I was in the book. But then, you know, I feel like this story, you know, people looking for love, romance, or, you know, or they feel stuck somehow in their life. They're looking for inspiration, encouragement. So you can be any age. It doesn't matter.
No,
so
that happened.
Age, so I think that's what happened. And even some guys have read it.
Wow.
That's really interesting. But
even
course,
men are love, hey? Even men need love.
They know, that's cool. So why not? Yeah.
So has anything exciting happened apart from all the lovely reviews and the feedback? Have you been invited to speak anywhere, or, you know, have you been?
Well, I'm trying to think. I have spoken at two book groups. Actually, I spoke remotely with the one in Budapest.
Oh, right.
It's really interesting. My friend there, Sophia, she organized it with a bunch of expats living there. Mm-hmm. And I spoke here with the American Women's Club. And I'm speaking next week at a company in Espoo, another city here, that a friend of mine organized for her English language class. And they just sent me like a list of questions about my book and the process. It's really interesting. So I will be going to that. And I started podcasting, being on podcasts. I think maybe this is number 10.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm still new at it, but you know, that was really exciting when I first did that because I had this fear for years of public speaking. And so I didn't know how it would go, but I'm really happy I did it.
Yeah.
And I just, I know, for example, I should try to get my book in the Finnish libraries here. And I should go to more American Women's Clubs groups in Europe. Mm. I don't know if they're doing them so much on Zoom anymore. They might be more.
Right.
I don't know. I have some ideas for that when travel truly opens up more. Mm. But it is very interesting and exciting.
That's been one of the great things to come out of the pandemic, I think, actually, that everybody is now using Zoom. And that, yeah, I mean, I'm in Portugal, you're in Finland. I've talked to people in Canada, I'm in Spain, in America, you know, as well as in the UK, which is kind of where my sort of core contacts are. I really hope that things like this still, you know, online opportunities do carry on.
I know. I'm going to this writers conference again in Stockholm in August. Mm. And that would be a good time to meet with the women's group there, but they may not meet in August. It might be too soon, you know?
Right, yeah.
But, you know, when I go on, when I travel, I'm so eager just to be, you know, relax and travel after such a long time. But there will come a time when if I go to Italy, for example, where I have my book with me and knock on some doors or, you know, offer to speak, or the next time I'm in the States, you know, because my book is carried, at least it's available online at various stores throughout like New England, where I would visit, in New York. So that would be great. But it's just having the, you know, it takes stamina. And now it's been almost a year. June 1st will be a year since it was launched. And even, like I said, I started marketing before. Mm-hmm. So I really need
18 months of effort.
Yeah. So I need to focus on the sequel now, which is called Triptych, and it picks up where Odyssey left off, and it fills in a lot of the gaps and addresses, for example, my father's death and more meetings with the psychic Angelica, more meetings with Jenny, and things that happened with my mother, and then illness in the family and more family crises. But there's a spiritual thread throughout it, and actually there is an Odyssey too, and that continues. So I wrote, while I was writing Odyssey, I was also writing this one.
Okay, yeah.
To get over to deal with other issues that came up like years after my father died. So I need to get back to that again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Sounds like a really good way to do it though. So so the first book is introduces you, and it's the love story, the adventure.
And then
now you've got people hooked into you and wanting to know more about you. So then you can kind of go back.
Yeah.
Over the other thing. I think probably if you started with that one first, it probably wouldn't have the same appeal, would it?
Yeah. Because actually the book ends on a high note, you know, like a happy note.
Yeah.
And then I had to really clarify, like, did I really get married? Because then there's the epilogue.
Yeah.
And then the reader sees that, yes, a few years later, yeah, she's married to this person.
Did you wear glasses?
What? Yes, he wears glasses.
And he's tall?
Yes, you'll see. So what happened was they wanted to know, people actually wrote me and said, well, what about the wedding? What happened? Where did you get married? Like, you didn't just talk about your wedding at all? Like, because it's all leading up to this man.
Yeah.
And then you don't say anything like, where did you get married? And they wanted details. And where did you go on your honeymoon? And I thought, oh my gosh, like, okay, I have to address that. So Triptych starts, I have to like write this whole beginning.
Right, it's funny,
It's funny because Triptych was meant to be three parts and now I might have to rename it.
That must be strange though. So it's your story that's obviously very personal to you, but suddenly you've got all these strangers kind of invested in you and what's happened to you and what's going to happen. That must be quite strange.
Yeah, I mean, it actually took me a while I was writing Odyssey, before I even thought it would be a book. You know, I didn't think it would be a book. And then when I thought it could be a book, there was that issue about, do I really want people to read this or what it's about me, whatever. But, you know, I thought, why not? Because it's hopeful and it's, I thought it's interesting and entertaining. And my friends always like, because when I'm out with my friends, they'll always say like, tell this person how you met your husband. So I wind up telling the story so many times. Now I can just say, read the book.
Read the book.
I'll give you the book. You can read it. So
yeah, it's something that I've thought about doing. I mean, when I moved here, I started writing. I did a lot of blog posts about life in Portugal. And I've kind of, lots of people said, you should turn it into a book. And I said, well, yeah, I will do, but I don't know what the end is yet. And when I initially came here, I thought the end would be I'd come here, I'd be here for 6 months maybe, and I'd decide it wasn't for me, because there's so many books about, you know, woman goes to live in continental Europe and it's the best thing ever. And then that didn't happen. I didn't go back. So it's kind of like, well, there isn't the ending yet, because I don't know how this chapter of my life ends.
At some point, maybe.
But it's also thinking about, I think my consideration is also for the other people involved. Did you have to think quite carefully about that? You know, when there are other people involved in your life.
For example, Hank, my ex-boyfriend, you know, I was really in love with him and I don't say anything negative about him, you know, because there, you know, it's not that kind of, it wasn't like this revenge story. It was like, I left with sadness and heavy heart, you know, and he's a great guy still. I mean, I'm not in touch with him now, but he was really a great person. So it's nothing personal. And a few people, you know, I changed their characteristics or I changed names or whatever, because, you know, they wouldn't want to be recognized.
Right.
I totally respect that. So it was just written with, I would say, like, with respect to all the characters and nothing like revealing that people would say, oh, that must be my husband there. Like, you know, there's one man who is married. I won't get into this storyline, but, you know, I would never want his wife to, you know, it's just not that kind of, it's not that kind of book, you know.
You don't want to be doing damage to other people's lives.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It's meant to be like fun and light and uplifting.
So what sort of advice would you have for anyone who maybe has a story to tell, you know, a true life story that they want to turn into?
Well, the first thing would be like, what I had to decide is to be true to the story and make sure the story that you're telling is one that you are saying that you feel comfortable with. Like, don't fictionalize it. Like, don't let people push you, like agents or publishers push you into changing it, if that's really what you don't want. Of course, if you want to be maybe a bestseller and get it out there and have people read it, you know, consider that. But if you really... if you want it to be more pure and be more your story, then really think about that. The other thing I would say would be, while you're writing, pace yourself. Don't feel pressured. I know there's a lot of advice out there, a lot of advice that writers say 1,000 words a day, 1,500, and there's a lot of pressure, but just go at your own pace. It took me many, many years. Because, you know, like I said, it was my first project and I wanted to do it right. I had a lot of developmental editors helping me in the beginning, you know, because I was writing and I thought, does this make sense to somebody? You know, and I wanted to know, and I had beta readers.
Yeah.
And they all pointed out inconsistencies, or you keep mentioning this phrase, you know, I was saying this mulled over, she's mulling over, he's mulling over. So you said mulled over 5 times, like
it stands out, doesn't it? It does stand out if you have a phrase that you overuse, and it takes the read out, because it's like, she said it again.
Yeah, then you do like a, you know, find and replace or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful. Or they would say things like, you know, here you are in Amsterdam and like, you're not describing it. Like, what are you looking at? What does this person look like? So it was really, really helpful.
I think that's something that a lot of people don't do. They kind of keep it private right until they've finished it. And if you're actually writing a book with a view to publishing it for other people to read, you kind of need to know that actually you're hitting certain marks with those people, don't you? Because you could write the whole thing and then realize that nobody's interested in it. It's completely written for your own, you know, for your own eyes only and not for anybody else. It doesn't make any sense because you've written about things that you know, but nobody else understands. And
you, yeah, like, I don't know what Jimmy looks like. Yeah. It was like, what does Jenny look like? What is she doing, you know, at the restaurant? And I was like, okay, well, I have this vision, but it just was in my head. It wasn't getting to the page. That was the problem.
Yeah. And we're not mind readers, are we? We can't get in there.
I know. So those are real. And I think, you know, don't skimp on an editor. I think like, I know some people, they're writers, they're like, oh, no, I'll just have my husband look, or this person. I mean, you can have beta readers, but please, like, the best thing, you know, treat yourself, save up for a professional editor. It's really important, really, not just to catch the typos, but to, like I said, these inconsistencies. It's really important.
To sense check it, to make sure it makes sense. You've not repeated yourself. You've not contradicted yourself. All that kind of thing.
In terms of marketing, like things I mentioned, like joining, setting up an author page on Instagram and posting and interacting with other authors. And I set up some months ago an author page finally on Facebook, because I thought, okay, now I'm writing less on my Odyssey of Love page, you know, because now the focus has to be on other books and other projects. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a general page and about traveling and things like that. So it's a lot of, as you know, a lot of social media. It takes a lot of time.
And however you go about publishing your book as well, you have to be prepared to do the marketing, don't you? Because
absolutely.
Your publisher is only going to do a very small amount, if any. So it does fall to the author to do it, to promote their book.
You know, I should say I never really did the querying with agents at all. I never did that. But what I did do was go to these conferences and I paid extra for one-on-ones with agents. And while it was quite positive in many ways, ultimately it was frustrating because they wanted me to fictionalize. So that's why I never really focused on the traditional side.
Right,
And I just thought, I really need to do this the way I feel what I feel comfortable with. And
And it's obviously worked from the feedback you've had.
Yeah, and I think Triptych I will do also. I will self-publish.
So have you got plans for more writing after your story is finished?
Yes, I do, actually, because while I was writing these, I actually wrote other things too, fiction.
Okay.
So I wrote some fairy tales based on experiences I'd had up in Middle Finland, where my husband's from, with a young boy. He's now a man. and adventures we had in the countryside. So there's sort of these magical fairy tales and based on things that happened really while we were there.
Okay.
So I have a collection of four fairy tales. I wrote a children's Christmas picture book, which I haven't even, I need to get professionally published, because that's very expensive, as you know.
Color printing is fiendishly expensive.
So that's kind of like on the back burner. And then what I really want to do, my heart's desire, is to write this third memoir that's in here. And part of it's already, you know, on the computer. It's a third memoir. And it's sort of, it's a lot about my parents and people that have been really important in my life. And how it connects, how they all connect. And but that's going to be something I really enjoy writing, like where I really just sit down and like really enjoy it, because it will be really connecting with these people, most of who have passed away, you know. Sort of as a tribute and the wisdom they left me with, so it's called tentatively Pearls of My Life. And so that will be really wonderful.
It sounds like fun to do, but probably quite emotional as well.
Yeah, very emotional. And actually some of it will be pulled from my father's autobiography. Okay. So it's also fictional, because while it's a memoir, it's like remembering his life through his eyes. Like for example, very quickly, he served in the Korean War in Italy. And while he was in Italy, he lived in Livorno. And I recently went to Livorno with parts from this book.
Yeah.
And I went to some of the places where he was. And I actually found the apartment building where he lived, which used to be a hotel. But someone actually took me there from the neighborhood and said, this is what it used to be, this, and this is where he lived.
Yeah.
And I was just thought, oh my God, my father lived here when he was 21, 22.
Gosh. Yeah.
And he had a girlfriend in Florence, you know, which was about an hour, I think about an hour of a train away. And he was from the Bronx. So just imagine this 21-year-old kid from the Bronx, never had even left New York, suddenly in Tuscany with this, you know, girlfriend, Florentine girlfriend. Yeah. So a lot of things I took that storyline, you know, true things from his life, and I'm making it into like fictionalizing it.
Yeah.
Like imagining, you know.
That sounds like a lot of things.
And then how he met my mother, and you know, and she played at Carnegie Hall when she was 14, and so imagining that event, and then like, you know, how she then met my father. So it's all this like, you know, again, like, but that's fictionalized. So I don't really know, is it historical fiction? Is it a memoir, like fictional? I have to really think what genre that is, so.
No, it's a bit of a hybrid, isn't it? Yeah,
so
it's fictionalized, but it's based on reality, but it's historical as well. Yeah. But I think that's the thing with writing, there are no rules really, are there? You don't have to write romance or science fiction,
right.
Historical, you know, literary historical fiction. You can mix and match genres and just write what works for you and what you think is going to work for the book and for the reader.
You know, and a lot of people try to pigeonhole you into like saying what a genre is, and like an Amazon, you know, you have to pick.
Oh.
So I wish there was a category romantic memoir, because mine is really a romantic memoir.
Yeah.
And instead it's like under travel and classical music, which is also appropriate, but I think ultimately when you say memoir, people think it's like a long biography usually.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It's more, it really does read more like fiction. So.
Yeah. It's one of the toughest things I do when I'm uploading books for clients, trying to find the right category to fit their book into, because occasionally there's something that's very obviously, but it's self-help or it's business or it's, but yeah, often there are so many different genres woven into the book that it's difficult to pick. And then quite often Amazon chooses its own category for you anyway. And you see yourself in some really random category. Oh, okay, I'm that, am I? Okay. But yeah, romantic memoir, that should definitely be a category.
Yeah, it should be, but it's not.
Yeah.
And I can't say romance because people will think, you know, they have their own ideas about that immediately. So it's not going to fit there, but it
sounds like a wonderful book, and the follow-ups and the folk tales, the fairy stories, they all sound like they're going to be great.
Yeah, I have a lot of publishing, self-publishing to do. That's really, you know, because these have been edited, those two projects, but it's a little more complicated being here in Finland with the fairy tales, because, you know, should they be translated into Finnish, and then I try to publish them here with a Finnish publisher.
Which
I think is more of the market, and then the children's picture book for Christmas, it's, you know,
but lovely to bring Finnish fairy tales to the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, well, that's a good point too, because Finland's really in the news.
It is definitely.
So I make something out of something negative.
It's been lovely meeting you today and hearing about your book.
Thank you for having me, Alison. Yeah.
Where can people find out more about you online?
Well, Odyssey of Love is available at Amazon and other retailers, Waterstones and Walmart in America and many others. The best thing to do would be to go to my website, which is www.lindajamsen.com. And Jamsen's Jamsen. And there you can find all the information. I also have an author page, the same, Linda Jamsen, at Facebook and Instagram. So you can find me there.
Linda Jamsen with an M and an N.
Yeah.
Thank you, Linda. It's been really great meeting you today.
Yes, it's been wonderful. Thank you. Have a lovely day, Alison.
You too. Thank you to Linda for being my guest on the podcast today. You can find her book Odyssey of Love on Amazon, and you can also connect with her through her website and on social media. All the links are in the show notes. Once you've explored Linda's website, come along to my website to find out how I work with authors. At theproofairy.com you'll find details of my services, including author coaching, editing, self-publishing, a writer's club, and dedicated writing sessions. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with info on how you could be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, tell your friends about it, and review it. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next time with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.